The Mystic Pete Chronicles.
Thank you.
are starting the Mystic Pete Chronicles, and I'm Mystic Pete. Every week, through interviews with thought leaders, visionaries, and creatives, and stories, music, and humor, we'll do some deep ponders in this time of great change and have some fun. If you'd like more information about today's guests or to be interviewed for the show yourself, I'm at mysticpete.com and mysticpete on social media. In today's show, I interview Manuk Rusalian. At the very beginning, I played his piece called Mira My Bell. And after the interview, I'll play his Thoughts of an Underprivileged. After that, music by Art Bleek from his Quiet Path project, Intertidal, from his Arlo project, Keep My Dream Alive. Then music by Adam Smith and Miss Emma, Come Again. And we'll finish things up with music by Irish Lal from his Chakras project, Third Eye Chakra. Mystic Pete Chronicles! It is February 26th, 2024. Mystic Pete here with Manuk Rusalian. Hi, Manuk.
Hi.
You are a musician and composer and film scorer and kind of an emerging guy on the scene, and I wanted to get you on the way up. I like what you're doing. I've listened to several of your pieces. Why don't you tell us about yourself, your background? I know you came out of like rock and roll and world music and a guitarist. Go ahead.
So yeah, I started off in, you know, the typical way of many composers, these modern composers these days. They start off as like in rock bands or some sort of like a, you know, band background. So yeah, I started off with a bunch of friends just doing like rock and roll music. Fun fact of it was, we also waited for one of the guitarists to learn to play guitar for 1.5 years until we actually made the band, we put it together. And so that wait was very long. So we waited for him to learn how to play the guitar, and then we made this band, and it was back in Lebanon. So that's where I was born. Coming from, you know, like, I'm Armenian, both of my parents are Armenian. I come from an Armenian background, but yeah, so that back then, that kind of music was kind of not that easy to perform. So we had a lot of surveillance and police, and we got investigated, and we got like some of my friends went to jail, and a lot of other people got confiscated. So it was a pretty interesting start.
So in Lebanon, whether in the 80s or so.
That was not even in the 80s. So it wasn't like maybe 2000. Not even in the 80s. No, I mean, it was still like, until today, it's sort of like a few years ago, even we had an incident with a rock band who was censored pretty hard with a cover they did for like a famous folk Lebanese singer.
This is a radical form of music in Lebanon.
Absolutely.
You're a troublemaker.
Exactly. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. That's what we did back then. That's how it was. I can't judge now. I've been away for like 15 years, so I can't really be the one to say how it is right now. But I do know that it affected a lot of the kids in our age who were doing that kind of music. It affected our lives, or like we just like a lot of us quit. A lot of just, you know, had to, you know, I don't know, find something else to do.
I mean, we're not really talking about you yet, but
no, I know.
Just explain, this is, we didn't know that. Yeah. Why was this so controversial, such a threat to authorities?
Yeah, well, it's because, you know, in Lebanon, it's more of like religious, like the political power is very, very well, like, it's very connected to the religion. So it's like, if you do something against religion, basically you're doing against the government, you know, so it's very in that sense.
And so for them, it's puritanical.
Yeah.
And rock and roll, you know, you're moving your hips, So it's already, like, provocative.
Well, exactly. At first, I mean, the thing is, it's just because it was black metal, right? So this, there was a person who was singing in not an you know, ordinary way. So it sounded like, I mean, if you listen to some black metal, it sounds like, for people who don't know what black metal is.
You were doing black metal.
Yeah, it was, it was black metal. It was not just normal rock and roll.
You are trouble.
I am trouble, yeah. I was very trouble. We did cause a lot of trouble, I guess, for authorities. But not for people, because we had a really big fan base. We had, like, concerts. We had, like, thousands of people coming in to watch us. Yeah, there was a huge, huge fan
base. You're a star for that.
Yeah, in back home, it was, like, my band was called Melancholy, and we were, like, you know, it was, fun fact, it was also, like, an Armenian kind of, it was all Armenian black metal band. So there was a lot of Armenian black metal rock people. Like, okay. I don't know why. That's I don't know what it is. I mean,
was that also a factor, you being Armenian in Lebanon, like those people?
Not necessarily. Troublemakers? No, not necessarily. Okay. I mean, not necessarily.
You were welcomed, actually.
We were welcomed, okay. And we were, like, kind of like envied as well. We were loved by the non-Armenians, that we were, like, you know, this very middle. We had, I mean, Armenians do tend to have some sort of a sound, I believe. And that was a lot in these scenes, in this kind of bands, you heard that sound. We were very melodical, very expressive, very lyrical people. So the bands that sounded that way were always Armenians. So they were always like, yeah, the Armenians and their, you know, their melodies and stuff like that. So we were kind of known for that. But there were also, like, Arabic, you know, like Lebanese, you know, people just doing black metal, which sounded also great, but it was slightly different. But we were kind of like, yeah, we were sort of, sound. I think we had a different sound, definitely.
Well, interesting, just a little aside before we get into your story. But like, we're telling people about what's happening into the world, in the world, which I know most people don't want to know here in the United States.
That's true. Okay.
But how interesting. And the last question was, even like the grunge alternative scene, Nirvana and so forth.
Everything that had a different, like, everything that was, like, had the freedom of speech and the freedom of, like, you know, expression or thinking was sort of, like, not so cool. Because, you know, then you're doing stuff that are not, you know, beneficial for the system. You know what I mean?
So Michael Jackson, pop and all that?
I mean, I think it's, I can't really pinpoint earlier how it was, and I really do think it was the noise that rock and roll just made. It sounded very different. They kind of added something to it, to the censorship. But I think that it's also, like, for example, these days, if you do a cover of a certain folk Lebanese, you know, music, like you say, like, you take that as a, I don't know, let's say recently what happened was also there was, like, Majida Rumi, for example. She's a very famous, really famous a folk singer, like Lebanese, like she's a star, like she's praised by all the musicians in Lebanon, like historically she has a really big name. And so one of our friend, you know, like bands, they actually covered for them. They did a cover, which sounded fantastic. I'm talking like recently, like 3-4 years, not even, maybe 4 years ago. I was like, I'm completely out of this scene. I'm just, you know, the classical guy now. I don't do those rock and roll stuff, but I'm always like looking what my fellow, you know, band friends in back in those days, what they're doing. So what they did was they did the cover, and they got a huge, like, they got, like, I don't know, 1 million views on YouTube or something, because it was a very, very good cover. But then the government and, like, the I think the singer who actually owns that song, she actually sued them and brought down the whole thing, because it sounded like it was a black metal cover. Because it was like black metal singing with her song. They censored it. They brought it down. So they're like, that song is gone. Wow. And I think that song would have been like a really big exposure for, you know, for like finally somebody coming from that part of the world and doing that kind of music and being like, you know, spotlighted for. I found it fantastic. But yeah, it still goes on. And I think that's what I'm trying to loop to, is that they, this kind of like, it's not just what they're saying. It's also, I think, the way the metal sounds, I guess, rock.
So were the
sound thing.
The artist as radical, as rebel, and we're dangerous.
Basically, yeah.
Okay. Good. Okay.
That's kind of
good background.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, yeah, it's, yeah.
And you came through it, somehow survived, stayed out of prison,
and
found your way over to...
To L.A. I'm in L.A.
And classical music.
So now, I mean, yeah, as career-wise, it was a long, long journey. I mean, it definitely... There was a long, huge arc of, like, development from rock to classical music and to writing the stuff that I write now. Is just... I did have a lot of, to be completely honest, I did have a lot of information that was missing, especially in the rock music. If you're going from there, because I do believe that you're supposed to do it the other way around and not come from rock to classical music, but you're supposed to come from classical music to rock, because then you already have all that information, which is in classical, deeply rooted in classical music. And, you know, so that I had to go through a lot of, like, I'm autodidact composer, by the way. I never studied music. And
an autodidact.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
You get extra points for knowing that word.
Yeah, so good autodidact. It's a didact, right? Okay, good.
Autodidact. I use that from time to time when I want to impress or confuse people.
Exactly.
So but you didn't study oboe or violin or anything like that?
I studied nothing. I just got my guitar when I was like, black metal days, waited for my friend to become another guitarist, and we started a band, like I said. So that's how I all started from the guitar. But I always felt that there was something missing, because the guitar is an instrument that either you sing with it, to be able to, like, multiply harmonies and to be able to structure something. Or, you know, or you play the piano to be able, like, to be more expressive. But the guitar always gave me that limit, because I couldn't sing. My voice is horrible. So I just did, like, that's why I'm happy that I moved from the guitar to piano, because it's a lot more expressive and there's a lot more, you know, you could use two hands to harmonize things. And composition now, thankfully, I can layer thousands of, like, hundreds of tracks over and over, and then have this whole harmonic build-up and cut out sections in the orchestra, which gives you a lot more harmonic layers. And that's what was missing for me in rock and roll and, you know, guitar music or whatever. So that's why I actually made the shift, and that's what took a lot of time for me to develop and, you know, and to go into this career. It's a lot of information is missing in rock music. Not that rock music is bad. I love rock music. I love simple music as well, but I think it's good to have that, you know, that information. Like, yeah.
Well, classical music is much more nuanced and subtle. There's a lot more layers. You know, in rock and roll, you know, there's a drummer, bass player, guitar, vocal, like there's five or six or maybe a few more things and some outliers. But in classical music, you have many more sounds going on.
Right.
First violin, second violin, right. Like, there's a lot of themes happening and development and over time. So it sounds like you're able to do it much more. And you compose at the keyboard, or you're using...
I mean, I start with the piano. Honestly, I also tell my students this, is that the composition doesn't start on the piano. It starts in your head. Because if once you master composing inside your head, then it's limitless, right? Then you just can... You don't have to be, you know, if you're not a good pianist, you can't really, you know, perform the stuff that you have in your head, right? So if I have, like, some very complex sort of, like, a line or something that I can't perform on the piano, in my brain, I can perform it and then apply it to it. So, yes, I start with the piano sometimes when I have, like, writer's block or I don't have any ideas and I just jam it out on the piano. But the writing is all in the head, so I think... There's no instrument that I could say that I write on. I think that starts from there.
Well, let's talk about the artistic inspiration and how those ideas come to you. Is it through dreams or imagination? How does it get in your head?
I think it's it really depends on what medium. So if I'm doing it something for, like, the pieces that I did, like the classical concert pieces that I wrote, they were mostly, like, from personal experiences, or like it's just like a story of your, if you have like a, if something that's happening in your life and you want to structure it in like a melodic or like in a sonic way, that's the inspiration. But if you have, for films for example, if you're lucky to work on a film that's very, very highly like motific or inspirational, highly complex, and a lot of like, there's a lot of like, you know, sides to the story, it kind of starts to write itself. Like, you don't even need to be absolutely, like, you know, like, inspired completely, because there is already stuff as a composer. Your job is to take that and to just, like, convert it into, like, to just sound or, you know. And I think that's what it is as a composer, is to master dialogue of music. So if you're able to speak the language, then you can just tell a story. How interesting the story is really depends on the medium. So if you have as a human being, you don't have a lot going on in your life, or your imagination is not pushing you to a certain extreme, you don't have anything to say. Do you know what I mean? That you don't have, then it's difficult to take that and convert it into music and make people completely like be inspired or be at all or really be involved in the music. I think it really depends on what you have. So yeah, it's a bit complicated answer for your question, but sort of.
You're talking about now the components of inspiration, but also craft. In other words,
yeah,
you're getting a download, but then you have to turn it into something that's familiar and has a
right
classical structure so people can understand it.
Right. I mean, sonic structure, yeah. Because, you know, like classical music, like in the beginning of like classical music, the way it was written, like if you listen to classical, you know, like pieces are, the way they're written is actually like you can close your eyes and listen and you understand what's going on. Even as if you're not a musician yourself, like an super intellectual or intelligent musician who knows a lot about music, if you're not that person, you can already understand it, kind of what's going on. Oh, here's somehow angry. Oh, here's somehow not angry. Oh, here's sweet. You know, here's more quiet. Or like, you can understand. So there is some sort of a story being told. Do you know what I mean? So it's not just, yeah. I mean, there has to be a story and you have to some sort of have something to say. Do you know what I mean?
Tell me about some of the pieces you've composed.
So one of my pieces is called Thoughts of an Underprivileged. It's a violin solo.
A compelling piece.
Thank you. He talks about an underprivileged person who is unable, who was not lucky enough to have the opportunity other people have. It comes from a personal influence back when, through my journey, coming from where I come from to be where I am right now and see the experience how things are easier for other people than to others. And some people just have things a lot more opportunities because of where they are in this world, like geographically located, or what family or what status you're born into. And some people are just in that way are not lucky enough to be able to have it easy. And I think that's, but it's also like the piece does give you the sense of hope. There is hope in there. It's not just complete despair. There's hope and there's strength. And yeah, I think hopefully when people are listening to it, they kind of like are able to absorb it and understand the way it's the way I meant it to be understood.
So it's partially biographical, yes. But you're also speaking to universal themes. And that's one of the interesting things about art. The casual listener may have no idea what the story is, but it's in there. It's another theme running through, particularly this piece of music.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a universal theme. The hand we're dealt,
mm-hmm.
What we do with it, we may come from privilege and blow it all. We may come from extremely difficult circumstances and really make something of ourselves. And complicating that story is sometimes it's the difficult circumstances which hone us, which polish us, which give us the challenges so we can find our strength and be great. So a lot of paradoxes in here.
Absolutely.
But it's in the piece somehow.
I absolutely agree with you. That's why it has a positive aspect of the part. Like there's parts of it that really feels positive, and you can see the character building his strength. So that's basically it is, yeah. That's why I wanted to make it sound, to make it, to name it, and to write it in a way that everybody can sort of relate to it, because it is a universal thing. And if I speak about myself, I am here right now and sitting where I'm sitting, but there's a lot of other people who are not. So it's, you know, it's not only about myself, it's about for other people and the way that the social structure is, and the way the whole universe, the way the whole politics are. And yeah, that's why I think that it's it could be a universal thing, and I hope that it resonates that way in other people.
Well, I'll make a further statement. I'm just really making a statement of my own idea, but you respond. We're confronted with such a dangerous and chaotic world right now. It's just going faster and faster. It's not going to slow down so we can catch our breath. It's just ramping up, and some of the good things are getting better, but some of the bad things are getting much worse. And the question of the statement is, you know, in this time of great upheaval, do the arts have any meaning? Can we affect anything at all? Or is it just part of the ocean of noise? You know, everybody is a creator these days. You know, there's millions and millions of videos and songs put up on social media every day. Like, is it just this sea of mediocrity that we have no influence over? Or is there a way for us to really make an impact? Big question.
It's a big question for sure. I think it really depends on the art that we are making. Like, if the art is meant for a corporation, that is not going to impact anything. So it really depends on what you're serving and what your motives are. So if you are doing art that is serving something about you or your people or about your whatever your motif is, if it's a universal motif, it will definitely impact. I think it will impact, and it will resonate very differently than if you're just doing art for the sake of doing it and sounding like it really depends on what your reason is for doing that art. I think that art in a very transparent and honest way, that if you create something very honest and transparent and just don't, and you believe in what you're doing, absolutely, like blindly believe in what you're doing, I think it will definitely resonate. And if you put, like I said, your belief in it, I think it will resonate differently. And I think it will resonate in people. So, but that's a completely different thing if people are listening. It's like a conversation. So if you're talking to somebody and the other person is not listening, even if your art is full of like reason or motif, like I said, something you believe in, if the other person is not listening, he's not gonna listen, he or she or it or whatever it is, it's not gonna listen, and it will not have an impact. I think that it's not just on the artist, it's also about the audience to have a certain, like, an open ear and be receptive for listening. It's a conversation we're having, and if you want to listen to it, then you will listen to it. If you don't want to listen to it, it's not going to affect you, for sure not. Definitely not.
Well, this is the challenge of the artist. I mean, what you're saying is that, you know, perhaps initially comes from a personal experience, but if nobody hears it, then it's, what's the point of even creating it? I mean, I have not created all kinds of things I wanted to because I just knew it would go nowhere. Mm-hmm. So it stymied my process. I didn't even want to waste the time. And then it sits on my computer and I have a broken heart because nobody heard this beautiful creation, and it hurts me. So I don't do it. There's finding the inspiration. But then there's this honest addressing of what the world can hear, what we personally can leverage, the machines of business and money and radio and, you know, social media and getting it out there. So we feel like our precious baby is appreciated and just not all for nothing. But, you know, we're just getting to some pretty universal themes very quickly. And, you know, where the artist fits into this really complicated world right now.
I think it's also the way, so just like I told you, it's a dialogue, right? You're just saying, like, what, you create this thing and it's not going to go anywhere. I think it's, everybody can say something and everybody can try to tell another person something and the other person listens or doesn't listen. That can, everyone can do that, right? And I think everyone can do art in a sort of way. That's why I said, but I think that if there's difference between artist, and I think as an artist who really wants to, if you want to propagate your idea and really get there and make people listen, you really also have to know how to speak. So you can't just like give your opinion or say something. You also have to speak the language of the person in front of you so that he is more receptive to listening to you. So I think that as art, you can't just go out and say like, listen, I'm doing art. That's how it is. That's it. This, accept it or not, I don't care. Just, you know, that's how it is. You can't just do that. You also have to speak a universal language or speak the language that of the person who's listening to that language. So if, for example, if I go create some sort of a electronic music, let's say, or rock music or whatever it is, yes, it's cool to be very creative or whatever it is, like you can, but you should always have some sort of a link between, you know, like you want to be absolute, you can't just do like abstract, let's say you're doing an abstract sort of thing and there is absolutely no link between that and what people kind of are used to or know. It's just like a language. If I come to you and I start talking to you suddenly in a very strange, like, English dialect, or I created, right? Not a dialect that exists. You'd be like, what? I don't understand you. But if I try to put the right words in the right place in a sentence, you probably will understand something. And it's pretty abstract, but you know what I'm trying to say is like some sort of bridge in your language, in the way you're speaking, your music, your art, you just find that and be persuasive and try to, you know, try to somehow find a common language with your audience. Try to find something, if you have a motif behind it. Like if you're trying to, let's say, I want to try to speak a universal truth, then speak a universal language. Or if you want to do some sort of a revolution in some, let's say, in this part of the world, you want to like kind of take down the whole political system and you're like thinking, you're going to speak their language. You're going to make their music that people are listening to there to cause some sort of like a snowball effect.
So it's a conversation between the creator and all that's out there.
Yes.
At which you may not even know what it is, but you have to communicate it. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So tell me about another piece you've created.
So another piece that I wrote is called Mira My Bell. And this piece is more of a romantic kind of story. It has to do something with me in my life and what, a very important person that I dedicated the music to. And the music that I had, this piece, I got the idea of it actually while I was sleeping and I had some sort of a dream. And I'm a composer who I usually write for films, so I always see what I'm writing. Most of the time I see the character and I try to like transcribe it into musical language, right? And I wanted to challenge myself to be able to write from my dream and try to keep that feeling intact and put it on a piece of paper. So that's what I did, and that's the piece is about. It's about love, actually.
Well, you know, that certainly has inspired some of us, love or the lack of it.
Yeah.
Well, what's ahead for you, Manouk Rusalian?
Well, at this point, I am really excited to have inspiring stories to tell. I'm really excited to meet people who have just inspiring things to portray, let's just say. And it doesn't matter what medium it is, what it is. It doesn't matter if it's music or it doesn't matter what it is. It's just the most important thing is to be part of something inspiring and just keep on doing what I love, of course, music. But I think at this point, I'm really excited to start new collaborations with directors, artists, singers. It doesn't really necessarily matter, but anything that is absolutely fulfilling. And I think it's a very important part of our lives is to have to do something on a daily basis that really feels fulfilling to you.
Well, that's exciting. You just want to engage. You want to live. Taste, touch, feel, engage. I love it.
Absolutely, absolutely. Or else there is no sense of it all. I think that as long as you're feeling, as long as you're doing something every day that I have to highlight that if you do, you're lucky enough to be able to doing something that you love and enjoy every day for a living is. I think that's without that is, it could be a pretty difficult. Personally speaking.
Well, you're just a real artist. Where can people find you?
They can find me on Instagram. It's Manouk Rusalian. They can just or find my website. It's again manouk-rusalian.com.
So now you're based in Los Angeles?
So I am actually based both in Berlin and in Los Angeles, so Berlin, Germany. I've been in Germany for 13 years now, and right now it was the most important thing to do in my career is to be here in LA and be active in the film scene here. And I'm really looking forward to enjoying the sunlight here in LA.
Sunlight. Well, how would you compare the scene in Berlin to LA?
Everything is a lot more, it's a lot more massive. Like the film industry here is just, LA feels for me like a huge film city. And in Berlin, it's a lot smaller. It's like Berlin feels like a village for me right now, if I think back. But yeah, I mean, at the same time, it's the opportunities are also a lot more bigger. There's a lot of different people in LA as well. And to just like give and take, I think it's a pretty pretty awesome city.
Well, I will say that while LA is a mecca for all of the arts, so we're just seething with creative people here, it also can be a very, very difficult place to be. And there's a lot of doors slammed in your face, or you can't even find the doors. There's a lot of hard surfaces here, and it can be very difficult for the artist to, you know, just to get on stage for no money. You know, we'll do that because we want to keep feeling like we are in the arts.
Yes, I think that patience is key. Okay. I think it's the most important thing is to be absolutely committed to what you're doing. And it's the most important thing is you have to, it shouldn't be a phase. It shouldn't be a phase. Music should not be a phase. It should be your life. So as long as you're living, there's nothing stopping you. You just continue doing what you're doing. And then when it stops, it stops. So
brilliant.
If you have that mentality, I think there's not much that could actually demotivate or stop you. As long as you have nothing to lose and you only have music in your life, there's no going back. So there's nothing to lose.
Thanks so much for coming into studio.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Pulling up like a boss in a blouse outfit. My shoes, the booze, and my cruise, the jet. me my business is pleasure. It's never been better. Give me your number. Let's get it together. Let's get it together.
We are coming to the end of the Mystic Pete Chronicles. You can reach me at mysticpete.com and Mystic Pete on social media. In today's show, I interviewed musician Manouk Roussalian. At the very beginning, I played his piece called Mira My Bell, and then after the interview, I played his Thoughts of an Underprivileged. Then we heard music by Art Bleek from his Quiet Path project, intertitle, and from his Arlo project, Keep My Dream Alive. Then music by Adam Smith and Miss Emma, Come Again. And we just wrapped things up with a piece by Irish Lal from his Chakras project, Third Eye Chakra. We'll be back next week with the very best of talk radio. Mystic Pete out.